Good morning, 7:39 here on News Radio 92.3. I'm Andrew McKay. It's Pensacola Morning News. And you know what? I should more often say it. And AM 1620. I know, you know, around this time of year, we sometimes have atmospheric issues that our FM signals, which are lower power because they're repeaters of the AM signal, run into. So I know you're having that issue sometimes. I know I had it this morning when I was driving into work. If that's ever the case, you can always listen to an AM 1620. That is always there. That's the big main original signal. And then also on the phone, you know, get your app, download the News Radio Pensacola app. It works great. You know, one button play. It's very easy. And if you can, you know, hook that up to your Bluetooth in your car or whatever, it's very, very simple to operate. And you can, you know, one of the, we don't talk about this a lot, but you can pause me. You can pause me and, you know, come back later. It'll remember your spot. Anyway, Mike Wood is a public information officer for the Pensacola Police Department, and he never pauses me. Welcome back. Welcome back to the show, Mike.
I guess I could get paused, too. I've never thought about that before. That's a good point.
That's true. No, they, if they can pause me, they can pause you. You know, that's the power. hey, I wanted to ask you, you know, obviously you're aware Mobile is moving away from the ShotSpotter, I guess because of cost concerns, you know, and we talked about this with the sheriff on Tuesday, but I wanted to follow up with you because obviously PPD and Escambia County Sheriff's Office are both the primary, the only users here locally, each with 3 square miles of coverage for it. From your perspective, from the police department's perspective, ShotSpotter is paying off, working very effective, helpful, or otherwise?
All of the above. It's working great for us. You know, it's still new, but it's working. In fact, the second day that it was online, we received a ShotSpotter notification of shots being fired. Officers responded and found shell casings. So there was a shooting there, but nobody ever called 911. So it proved itself on day number two. And it's something that it's a tool that we're continuing to use and that has been very beneficial for us.
And so when we talked with the sheriff about this on Tuesday, he made the comment that, you know, hundreds of incidents that have been, you know, caught by ShotSpotter, but not an awful lot of crimes. He didn't mean it's a bad thing. He just meant that, you know, there's a lot more people shooting. I mean, I called 911 last night because somebody put 8 shots in the air near our house last night. And, you know, I was like the 10th person to call, they told me. So, you know, it happens. People shoot guns. Many of them are not at a person or with an injury or something like that. What's the ratio for you guys in terms of criminal events versus other that we're just not sure about?
Well, the sheriff brought up a good point, and he's right. It's not just the shootings, the actual shootings, but law enforcement needs to know where the shots are being fired so we can concentrate our efforts, such as street crimes units and things like that, over in those areas. We can saturate those areas and find out what the problem is, who is doing it, and make an arrest. You don't necessarily have to be shot in order, you know, for those things to happen. We just need to know where the problem areas involving guns are, and ShotSpotter is valuable in that way as well.
And then the only last thing on this is when the grant funding runs out, if it runs out, I assume that at that point you're going to assess the question of, is it worth continuing, at what cost, where can we secure funds, all that kind of stuff, which is, what, about a year and a half out now?
Yes, and that's with any program that we have. When, you know, when you're talking taxpayer dollars and grants and things like that, when the money runs out, we've got to decide where we're going to spend the money, where we're going to get the money, and whether it's prudent to do so. So that's something that we will revisit later.
Very good. You had a note this week that there's a fairly high or higher than average number of scams running around right now. What's that all about?
Yeah, and we talk about this often, and we can't talk enough, and we had one individual lose $49,000 of savings to a scammer. And, you know, if you know people that are not just the elderly, but the people just trust others. And I got to tell you, these scams are, they use caller ID information. They put it in there that shows at times it's been Pensacola Police Department. They use names of officers that actually work there. While that's not the case in every scam, they do sound legitimate and they take your money. But people need to know, if you know somebody that can be vulnerable like that, that is very trusting, law enforcement will never, ever ask for money over the phone to settle a warrant, a traffic ticket, or anything like that. And they're posing as bail bondsmen that will do the same thing. So if cryptocurrency comes up in the conversation or gift cards comes up in the conversation, hang up on them. It's not legitimate.
It's so discouraging because the primary prey target is elderly people who have done nothing but work hard and save their whole lives. And they're not as sophisticated technologically, and they're not as sophisticated psychologically, maybe, especially if they're getting older. And they are the, I mean, that's the golden pot they're looking for. And it's, how can we protect those people better? You know, it's a very, very frustrating situation, right?
Absolutely. And talking to one of the investigators yesterday, I just, the look in his eyes, the anger of these people losing their money. And sometimes they're able to get some of the money back. But anytime you're dealing in cryptocurrency, that money is gone. It's instantly gone, and there's nothing they can do to get it back. So it's very frustrating. It's, you know, on law enforcement's part, it's a sad thing. And I don't think that it's ever going to go away. The best thing that we can hope to do is educate the public on these types of things. If there's any doubt in your mind, if you trust your gut feeling, hang up on those people and don't give them a cent.
This week, Lakeview actually said that they have their new, you know, intake center for Bacharach patients is up and running. We're actually going to be talking to the president tomorrow about that. I assume this is a bit or big hallelujah moment for you guys in law enforcement.
It's a huge hallelujah moment. You know, in police work, you want the officers on the street ready for emergency calls, ready to do their jobs at a moment's notice. And then you have situations, you know, such as Bacharach and things like that, that used to take hours, that would keep the officer busy or off the street for hours. This is going to help eliminate that problem. Maybe not totally, but it sure does make it go from hours to a few minutes of tying the officer up, and we're very glad to see that.
Right, and, you know, the mayor is enthusiastic about this. I'm sure Sheriff Simmons is enthusiastic about this. I mean, everybody, this is what we've been waiting for, so this is great news. And, you know, it may not be, as the mayor said yesterday, that everybody necessarily, personally encounters this need for service, but, you know, when you have delays because police officers are tied up doing other things and then they can't come to your call fast enough or as fast as you'd like them to, we see the impact of not having something like this, so that's good. I always like to end with a did you know or a cop myth. Do you have one for me this week, Mike?
Yeah, did you know that you can get arrested for DUI and not drive? And basically what I'm talking about is sleeping it off in your car. And Florida is one of the states where you can be arrested for a DUI if you're sleeping it off in the car. And this, there's a lot of issues here. There's a lot of ways this could happen. Now, if you're passed out at the wheel in the middle of 9th and Cervantes, that's obviously a DUI. But what if you're outside of a bar and you're in the car and the vehicle is running and you're sleeping in the driver's seat? The answer is yes, you can be arrested for that. Now, officers take everything into consideration when they see something like this. If you're in your vehicle and you're in the back seat and the keys are in the glove box, you have to take that into consideration. Is that something you want to arrest somebody for a DUI? Probably not. But we just want to make sure everybody understands that we get it if you try to do the right thing and not drive. But you're going to need to make it very, very obvious to law enforcement that you were not intending to drive, and that's the back seat sleeping with the keys of the key fob in the glove box. But if you're in the front seat and it's running, that could probably be a problem for you.
Interesting. No, that makes sense. It's an interesting difference, for example, with the texting law, where if you're stopped, you're not texting and driving. But if you're stopped and you're drunk, you know, even if you're not moving or not intending to move, you definitely are in violation. So backseat sleep or sleep in the trunk if you want. Sleep it off in the trunk, right?
Well, that's definitely going to get our attention if we see that or pop a trunk open. Yeah, let's not do that. But yeah, the back seat is good. But you know, in another scenario is if you're, let's say you made somebody upset in a bar and you had every intention of driving drunk and you get out to your car and all four of your tires are slashed and now you're in the car sleeping because you had no way to drive home. Is that a DUI? Well, that vehicle cannot be operated.
Huh.
So, you know, we have a lot of things that we have to take into consideration when we're on the scene. The best thing to do is to take that Lyft, Uber, cab, or have a designated driver.
Always is the best answer. Mike Wood, he's the public information officer for PPD. Mike, as always, thank you for the time and keeping us informed, sir. I appreciate it.
Thank you.